And we're back. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS. 8th District U.S. Congressman Mike Rogers' cybersecurity bill passed the House yesterday, although it's not clear if the Obama administration will support it, with critics saying that it doesn't sufficiently protect personal information. To find out more about the legislation and just how vulnerable our cyber infrastructure is, I'm joined by Jessica Herrera Flanagan, a fellow at the Center for National Policy and the former staff director and general counsel for the House Homeland Security Committee. Jessica, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Oh, thank you for having me.
I want to first ask you about just how serious a cyber attack on the U.S. could be. You know, supporters of the bill say that a successful attack on the U.S. power grid, for example, could black out a large region of the country for more than a year before it can be restored. Is that a realistic scenario?
It is. I mean, so much of our networks today, whether it's we're talking about our telephone networks or the smart grid, or chemical security plants, they're all networked together through the Internet and through various types of computer facilities, and that makes us at risk. As long as something's connected to the net, someone can get into it.
But isn't the nature of Internet infrastructure redundant in a way where there could never really be a full blackout like this?
There could possibly not be an entire blackout across the entire country, but even a slight blackout would have an adverse effect on the nation. Just think of what happened in New York City a few years ago when there was a blackout in the middle of summer and the amount of the impact it had on that city. So even an impact onto a major city or a regional location could have adverse effects.
Now, let's put aside the personal information issue, but let's look at this bill, the Cyber Intelligence Sharing and Protection Act. What about it actually helps prevent a devastating cyber attack?
One of the biggest problems that we've had, and this goes back 20, 25 years when we started looking at cybersecurity and what they call critical infrastructures, the power grid, the financial institutions, and such. One of the big problems we've seen is there's not a really good way of sharing information, both between private sector companies and also between the government and private sector. What we're increasingly seeing in the past few years is that a number of our threats could either be terrorist threats, or they could be threats from foreign nations who are trying to get information from us or attack our systems. That information on where those threats are coming from lies within the federal government, sometimes with the intelligence agencies. And we need a vehicle in which to get that information to the private sector. Likewise, we need a way for the private sector to share information among themselves so we know what kind of threats are out there, and that's what this bill is attempting to address.
Are you saying right now the two entities, the government and private industry, are somehow not able to provide each other that critical information?
There's a limited amount of information sharing going on, but there have been a number of barriers through the years that have kept it from being effective. There's not really a good vehicle for the sharing of cyber intelligence information, cyber threat information, in an effective manner. And it's a problem because if you look at the critical infrastructures, 85% of them are in the hands of the private sector. So on one hand, you have the critical infrastructures being owned by the private sector. On the other hand, you have the threat information being mostly within the government's hands.
But doesn't the private sector have some of the top computer technicians in the country available to them to protect their own networks? I mean, how can the government really help them in that way?
Well, they can protect their own networks, but knowing what kind of threats are out there, what the government is seeing overseas as part of its intelligence gathering effort, they don't necessarily have insight into that.
So the concern, of course, is critics are saying this legislation is going to expose our personal information to the government in ways that we don't want to have done. How exactly is our personal information going to be out there?
Well, one of the things the bill does is since it makes it easier for the government to share information with the private sector, it also makes it easier for the private sector to share information with the government voluntarily. There are no requirements that the private sector share information. But a big concern is that by enabling the private sector to share information with the government, and the government in this case being intelligence agencies, that we may be setting up some constitutional violations, Fourth Amendment surveillance problems. That was one of the original concerns with the bill leading up to this week. Yesterday when the bill was considered in the House, there were a number of amendments offered that would try to address some of those privacy and civil liberties concerns, though a lot of critics still weren't satisfied with those.
I'm talking to Jessica Herrera Flanagan, a fellow at the Center for National Policy and a former staff director and general counsel for the House Homeland Security Committee. in some ways, it's hard to believe, though, Jessica, that the intelligence community doesn't already have as much access to information as it likes. Is there really anything that stops high-level security agencies in this country from digging into somebody's information and finding out what they need to about them?
Well, right now there are a lot of restrictions on the type of information they can get from you, me, as U.S. citizens. A lot of the information they gather is overseas. And one of the concerns that was raised about this bill before there were safeguards put into place was that those safeguards would not be there and the private sector could just share that information with the government if it asked about it. But there were, as I mentioned, a number of amendments that were offered that would limit the amount of information the government could get. And these amendments passed as part of the process yesterday. Or that it would make it be for a lawful process for things like child pornography or national security issues or protecting someone from the danger of death or seriously bodily harm. So they limited the scope of what could be shared.
Are you concerned about the government giving Comcast a call, let's say, and asking for your emails?
I am not. But my background, I used to be a cyber prosecutor, so I know that there are rules in place to keep that from happening. And I would hope that both Comcast and the government would follow those rules.
I mean, do you think there's any clear justification for this legislation to move ahead right now and actually be put into law?
I think there's going to be some. It passed the House yesterday. It mostly passed along partisan lines, though there were 42 Democrats who jumped over and voted with the Republicans to have it passed, and there were actually 28 or so Republicans who voted against it because of the privacy, civil liberties concerns. The next step forward is into the Senate. It's not clear that it has a path forward in the Senate. The Senate wants to take a very different approach to looking at cybersecurity. In particular, one of the things it wants to do is say to the critical infrastructure or entities out there, let's look at ways to put together voluntary standards to make sure you're doing what you need to do to protect your systems. And that is not something that the House was interested in doing. It's not clear that the Senate wants to consider what the House has done, so we're kind of at a standstill for now.
Although when you see groups like Anonymous, basically a bunch of hackers getting into high-security networks with apparent ease, doesn't that point to the fact that any kind of measure like this really won't do very much when it comes to those that are really intent and knowledgeable to do potential harm to a network?
Well, anyone wanting to do potential harm, there are ways to mitigate the harms. I mean, that's what we're really looking at. There's no way to make a network 100% proof. As long as something's connected, the only way to make something 100% proof is to unplug it and make it a standalone computer not hooked to the Internet. Wirelessly or anywhere else. I mean, that's the only way to make something 100% proof. But what we can do is put into place measures that would make a system more secure, figure out what the threats are coming both from the criminal elements and some of the international elements that want to do harm to our systems, and try to do the best and mitigate against those.
Are we in a kind of a pre-9/11 internet age right now? Do you foresee some kind of a major devastating attack on our infrastructure that could change our entire experience of the Internet?
It's always a possibility. And there have been calls for many years now saying that there's going to be a digital Pearl Harbor, if you will, on the Internet. Hopefully we've put enough safeguards into place and have enough systems into place that we could try to address that as soon as it erupted, but it's always a possibility. And there's also a possibility of there being threats against specific locations, directed threats to basically frighten us or cause us economic harm.
If we were to see an attack that would take a portion of the network down here in the U.S., what's your estimate on how long that outage could potentially last?
It really depends on what type of attack it happens. If it's an attack that opens up a dam, well, that could potentially have adverse effects. You know, it could be a matter of seconds. If a dam is open and water starts flowing, that could have a very adverse effect. If it's knocking down an electricity grid, depends on what they do to the grid. If it's getting into financial institutions, the institutions could put something into place and block people from continuing those attacks. It's hard to say without seeing the exact attack that's happening.
Is there a potential attack that could destroy or really cripple the internet access to a portion of the country for a long period of time and potentially weeks or months even?
There potentially could be. Someone attacks the electric grid and takes out the electricity. That, depending on how they do that, that could adversely affect parts of the country. If there are attacks to bring down one of the two main servers that kind of service most of the internet, that's another way. I wouldn't say months, but days potentially, depending on what they do. What scares me the most is seeing an internet attack that's combined with a physical attack.
Does the U.S., would you say, do we have the top IT minds in the world, or are there countries that might have people that, know quite a lot more than us?
Well, we have some great people here, but other nations are catching up with us on the science and technology front. We have a number of individuals we educate here in the U.S., and because of various immigration laws, we ship them back to their countries where they have the great training of being educated in U.S. universities and are going back home and competing against us. So it's a mix. We do have great minds, but other nations are catching up.
One last thing. This cybersecurity bill, do you support it, and do you think it should be passed into law?
I think that the bill has a lot of good strengths in it. They worked really hard to address a number of issues. The privacy, civil liberties issues are obviously of concern, and I need to take a closer look at the amendments that were passed yesterday, but I know they have tried to address a number of issues. I think it only solves part of the problem. Some of the other issues, including the ones that the Senate is considering, such as critical infrastructure protection, voluntary standards, dealing with data breach and data security issues, dealing with the international issues like cybercrime laws, I think those all need to be addressed as well, because one piece is not going to solve the whole thing.
Jessica Herrera Flanagan, a fellow at the Center for National Policy and former staff director and general counsel for the House Homeland Security Committee. Jessica, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
And we're coming right back, but I do want to take a moment to ask you for feedback. We're trying to make the show better. We're trying to pursue subjects that are more interesting to you, but we need to hear from you. Please send us a line. Our email address is ccrecap@gmail.com. I'm Michael Cohen, and this is 1320 WILS.